Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Kenneth Davis is here, too. Kenneth C. Davis is a New York Times bestselling author of Don't Know Much About History. Amazon calls him the King of Knowing. No less presumptuous title than the King of Knowing. I like that. I wish they called me that. He's also, many of you have seen him on television and heard him on other radio shows in addition to mine. He's been here before. And also, he is a commentator on NPR's All Things Considered. I'm holding his new book in my hand. It's a doozy. It's a beauty. Really beautiful book, folks, in addition to what's inside. Don't Know Much About Mythology. Ken Davis, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. A great pleasure to be with you.
And happy holidays to you.
And happy holidays to you as well, and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. What are you in New York City right now?
I'm actually in Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We called you at another place, but you typically live in New York City, don't you?
I live in New York. I spend a lot of time in Vermont as well. Those are my two sort of home bases. And unfortunately, I'm not in New York today.
I was going to say, there's nothing mythological about the transit strike, is there?
Well, it's, I guess for the people who are there, it's like the labors of Sisyphus, to use a mythological of course, Sisyphus.
I was just going to say that, Ken.
The character who had to roll the stone up the hill for all eternity, and it rolled back then, and must feel like that's what it feels like to be a commuter in New York these last few days. It's sad and terrible, especially in the winter, and especially just
right
a few
here.
Days before Christmas.
My heart goes out to the small business owners who are trying to make a living in New York City, and their customers can't get to them, and it really upsets me to think about that. But anyway, that's another story. We'll have to talk about that another time. Let's talk about Christmas and the tradition part of it. That's where some of the mythology is involved, not the religious part, the tradition part, right?
No, absolutely, I wanted to be clear on that everything that we love and cherish and appreciate and enjoy about Christmas in terms of the trappings really come from ancient pagan myths that are much older than Christianity. And I'm talking about everything from the date of Christmas itself to the Christmas tree and mistletoe and the Yule log. All of these things were ancient traditions that got adopted and adapted by Christianity, often to win converts from paganism.
It was a pragmatic move, wasn't it?
Well, very much so. And we, I guess the best way to describe that is to start with the date, the December 25th date. Of course, the scripture nowhere mentions the date of the birth of Jesus.
Nope.
Doesn't mention the year of the birth of Jesus as well, and that's been the subject of great speculation. But we do celebrate it, at least in the Western tradition, on December 25th. So why? Well, it goes back to ancient Rome, where the Romans had a week-long feast called the Saturnalia, in honor of Saturn, an agricultural god, and this was a week-long festival of gift-giving and candlelighting. Doesn't that sound familiar? And it culminated with a very important day, the winter solstice, which fell in Rome in that time on the calendar on December 25th.
I was going to say, why was it 4 days later, but it was a different calendar in those days, wasn't it?
The calendar has changed, absolutely. The calendar has changed many times in 2,000 years, but that's one of the changes. So the Romans celebrated on that day, and what early Christians were able to do, since they were outlawed, was hide their celebrations behind this Roman festival, this Roman holiday.
But so it was pragmatic for them as well, wasn't it?
It was very pragmatic at first. It was a way to celebrate and get away with it. As time went by and Christianity grew, one of the things that early Christians were able to do was to say to the pagans who worshipped Saturn or a number of other gods, and they were celebrating the idea of the birth of the sun, the return of light to the world, world was to say, you've got it right, the light is coming back into the world, but it's the light of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so by the year 350, Christianity was powerful enough, the Pope was powerful enough
right.
to say, this date, December 25th, is no longer the birthday of the gods, it is the birthday of Jesus, and we will celebrate the Mass of Christ today. And that's where we get Christmas.
Well, I do know people who get troubled by just the mere discussion of what we're talking about right now. I know Christians who are troubled by this. I don't know why. If we don't know the date, I mean, what difference does it make? And when you describe to us the pragmatic events that happened, the steps that were taken, the actions that were taken, and the reasons they were taken, they make great sense to me. If you're a Christian and you follow the early part of the church, then through Paul and all that, you realize that a lot of things had to be done that were pragmatic to get them done, and you didn't worry about a date.
Yeah, not to be glib or mercenary about it, but if you think of Christianity as a small business, it had to promote itself. It had to market itself in many ways to its customers. And its customers were people not only in ancient Rome, but all around the world at that time who did have beliefs in other gods
right.
and other mythologies and other ancient religions.
Well, It made to me this was highly intelligent. This was a very smart thing for them to do, because what they were doing is they were adapting not only for survival but for the proliferation of the religion.
And clearly, it was very successful. And it didn't compromise principle. It just said, we'll keep your traditions. And people
right.
throughout human history have enjoyed rituals and traditions. And that's why when I say there was candlelighting and gift-giving, that was part of it. Just as a few months ago, perhaps we were talking about Halloween, I don't know, but that was also an ancient mm-hmm. Celtic pagan festival, a harvest
right.
festival, where people dressed up and lit fires, and some of those traditions carried over, and then were given a Christian face.
How did Santa Claus get included in all this?
Santa Claus is a little bit more complicated, because it comes from a lot of different
Santa Claus
traditions.
Is more complicated than Christianity?
Well, no, I just mean the date of Christmas is a fairly simple one.
I got you. Okay.
There are a couple of different strains. First of all, the Santa Claus, the name specifically, comes from the Dutch version of St. Nicholas was Sinterklaas. And when mm-hmm. the Dutch came to America, it was anglicized as Santa Claus. Now, who is St. Nicholas? Early Christian, perhaps legendary figure. His feast day was celebrated in December, so he was connected to
right.
Christmas time.
And, of course, and all know he had the eight little tiny reindeer and the one with the big red nose. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. And we're going to get Kenneth to tell us, could they really fly? Was that just a myth? 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
There I was with the old man, stranded again. So off I ran. A young world crashing around me.
Welcome back. It's 23 after. That's Ann Wilson.
Getting what I need.
Singing there. She and her sister, Nancy. The group Heart. It's a great song. There's no mythology about that. That's a real song, real people. Kenneth Davis is our guest and our good friend. He's the guy who wrote Don't Know Much About Mythology. That's the new book, right, Ken?
That is correct. The newest book for adults. Mm-hmm.
It's and tell us about the other books.
Well, 15 years ago, the first book, a little more than 15 years ago now, the first book, Don't Know Much About History, came out, and the point was simply to take a subject that I loved and was passionate about and teach it to people in a way that was a little bit more interesting and fun than it was back in high school. And what I discovered is that people do love history. They
yep.
just hate the dull version they got back in high school.
So you put a little zest into history. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a little zest. First of all, it's basically making it human, and that's, you know, that's what the textbooks have stolen from history and a lot of these other subjects. So I've went on from history to a lot of other subjects we should know about but don't. Geography, the American Civil War, a whole book just on that subject. Mm-hmm. The Bible, of course.
Universe. That's a good one. Now, are these available all gaggled together on a website somewhere?
I have a website called don'tknowmuch.com. However, I do not sell books there. It's purely
informational.
They can link,
though. They can find all the books that you sell, and then they can link from there over to where they can buy the book, right?
Yes, there are links at that site to all of the online booksellers, and but you can also go into your local bookstore.
The mythology book, if the others aren't there, and they may be, but the mythology book's there for sure. And, folks, I got to tell you, when you see this mythology book, Kenneth, seriously, I mean, I'm impressed with what's inside, of course. But this is a beautiful book. This is a great gift book.
I think so, too. You can wrap it up and put it underneath that pagan fir tree you have in your living room.
Well, it's a heavy, it's a big, thick, hardback book. This is the kind of book people keep for a long time. And the good thing about it is they can read a little bit. They don't have to read like 29 pages to get through an idea. And so I like that.
That's right.
With my short attention span, I like that part of it. Anyway,
well, we're all busy, and the books are really built around a series of questions and answers. And I ask the questions and answer it in a few short pages. So you can read it straight through, and it's a narrative history, or you can dip in and out. Someone once said, I'm sorry to say this to you, but your books are the perfect John books. And I said, that's all right.
Mind
that.
Hey, whatever it takes to get
really
them,
read.
Whatever it takes to get them out the door, that's what I say. A sale is a sale. Kenneth C. Davis is the author, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Ken, where did the eight tiny flying reindeer, where'd that come from?
Well, that's an interesting story. We started to talk about St. Nicholas.
And of course, we know that this is not a myth. Santa really, you know, he goes all over the world taking toys to little kids, and you know, and with the reindeer and the sleigh. But where did that? How did that originate?
Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Well, again, it goes back to the pagan roots up in the Norse world. The Norse or the Vikings, also the Germanic people. There was a god named Odin, and Odin would come in the winter night sky. Again, at the winter solstice, which was, of course, yesterday. We actually had the solstice. This was a 12-day feast. Remember, that's important. 12 days. That comes up again, doesn't it, at Christmas time? And Odin was bringing light back to the world. Now, Odin would ride across the winter night sky on an eight-legged horse. Mm-hmm. And the children would put out their shoes filled with sugar and straw for Odin's horse.
Ah.
Well, of course, as time went by and Christianity was introduced and the idea of Christmas and a Father Christmas figure, Odin was transformed into Father Christmas and later Santa Claus, and his eight-legged horse became eight tiny reindeer up in the
and
frozen
so then
north.
So he found this special breed of reindeer that can fly, and that's what he does. And of course, that's just amazing, isn't it?
Well, of course, and it makes perfect sense that this should all go back to these ancient pagan ideas where flying horses are completely part of the tradition. But the Norse are very important in a lot of our Christmas traditions. The Norse, the Vikings, Scandinavian people, Germanic people, a lot of our American Christmas traditions are actually German, including the Christmas tree. We think of it as an English thing, but it really is Christmas tree is very German. The famous Christmas song, O Tannenbaum, people translate that as O Christmas tree, but actually the literal translation is O fir tree, F-I-R, not F-U-R.
I thought it was for the Tannenbaum family that was in the movie, that really bad movie. Okay, let's move over to one of my favorite parts of the holidays, and that's mistletoe. Where did kissing under the mistletoe come from?
Mistletoe comes from two places, actually. First of all, there are the Celtic Druids. These are the same people who brought you Halloween.
Right.
They believed that mistletoe was a sacred plant, that it had healing powers, that it was given to women during childbirth to ease the pain of labor. And this is a plant of course, also an evergreen.
And she said, get that away from me. That's how this got started, right?
she, the, The mistletoe is an evergreen. It's a parasitic plant, actually, that grows on oak trees, which were sacred to the Druids. And it was so sacred, that in fact, that if enemies or strangers met and there was mistletoe nearby, they would put down their swords and exchange a greeting of peace underneath this. Underneath. Well, of course, the greeting of peace eventually gets a more romantic notion.
Well, naturally, a bunch of guys are going to turn that into an opportunity to kiss a girl, right?
Absolutely.
That's my story.
This was such a powerful pagan symbol, actually, that it was eventually banned in the churches of England.
I got to wrap it up, Ken. It's always fun to have you here. I hope you come back real soon.
Well, and I just want to say that discussing these things doesn't take anything away from what Christmas really
Absolutely
means.
Not. Absolutely not. Kenneth Davis, ladies and gentlemen, Merry Christmas, Kenneth, and I'll
Merry
see you
Christmas
next time.
Thank you. Thanks.
Quick break. Right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.